This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I'm Alex Smith, host of Radio EcoShock, and in my opinion, you haven't tasted alternative media until you've tuned in to the Sea Realm podcast. Host KMO holds in-depth conversations with an amazing roster of serious guests, some of them very well known, and by the way, C stands for consciousness. Maybe it's serendipity, maybe it's a strong movement in the counterculture, but completely independently, KMO and I were both preparing shows on the growing number of our listeners asking whether we humans are about to go extinct. That's mostly in response to presentations and speeches by Dr. Guy McPherson, formerly a professor of natural sciences at the University of Arizona. So let's get to it, KMO. Welcome, and I know you've covered this before. Why did you decide to look further into the near-term extinction idea?
Well, every few days I will get an email from a listener saying, hey, I just heard this really mind-blowing presentation by Dr. Guy McPherson. You know, why aren't you doing shows on this all the time? And, you know, I've had Guy McPherson on the Sea Realm podcast many times, a few times anyway, and I have let go some of his, what I thought to be more questionable claims about, say, Arctic methane, positive feedback loops leading to global catastrophe in short order. But because so many people are taking it seriously, and because Guy McPherson is finding traction with this presentation to the point where he's giving a great boost to the Arctic News blog, and other people who want to do similar presentations are going to that same blog and presenting it as a credible source for scientific information, it seems like I do need to speak up and say something. Even though I know Guy McPherson personally, I have had drinks with him, you know, I've spent time with him face to face. He is an enjoyable person to be around. He is somebody that I like, but I have seen his dark side, and I don't trust his presentation any longer. I don't trust that he's giving it in good faith. And so I do need to say something.
Yeah, me too. And I feel exactly the same. I like Guy McPherson, and he's been nothing but kind to me. But there are problems with this. Well, for one thing, you know, I had a guest, Scott K. Johnson. I know you're going to have him as a guest. He's a science writer who has been critical of Guy McPherson's presentation of science. And one thing alarmed me, talking with Scott KMO, he's had emails from spouses or relatives of people who made big life changes. They quit their jobs, their relationships, or sold off their possessions based on what they heard. And they seem fixated on everything about our upcoming demise as a species and nothing else. It seems almost like a parallel to religious conversion to me, or maybe the most extreme preppers. What do you think?
Well, I went through a version of that myself with peak oil. You know, when I started the Sea Realm podcast, I was a married man with two children, and I still have two children, but I don't have the wife anymore. She was not willing to follow me down the path of really fixating on a fast collapse from peak oil, which I thought, you know, in 2007, 2008, when this was really firmly in my mind, I thought that, you know, by 2014, it would be all over. I thought, you know, the rubble would have stopped bouncing, as John Michael Greer would say, by now. And things just don't move that slowly. You know, the inertia of the current system and the real genius of capitalism in turning catastrophe into a profit center is going to keep things going. And I came to the conclusion that one thing you should never expect if you're doing long-term thinking and if you are thinking seriously about issues which need to be taken seriously and which aren't presented in any serious way in the corporate media, you have to let go of any expectation that you will be vindicated in the eyes of the people who doubt you. The processes move so slowly, and people's worldviews are so self-defending, so self-insulating, and so sort of homeostatic, you might say, that really there's almost no real-world event that is going to make the scales fall from everybody's eyes and say, oh, man, you were right. I was wrong. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. So, like, when I first met Guy McPherson, he was very interested in peak oil, just as I was, and that was, you know, our connection. And he was certain that within 5 years' time, that the imperial system, as he describes it, and I don't dispute him, would have collapsed because of peak oil. Well, it hasn't collapsed, and it doesn't seem like it's going to collapse anytime soon. So he's changed his tune now to, well, it's climate change. It's going to take the whole system down. You know, within my lifetime, I'm going to see it happen. And it strikes me as being akin to somebody who's saying, this person that I really hate, my dire enemy, his life is about to be destroyed because the bad karma that he puts out into the world is going to come back to him. His wife is going to leave him. He's going to get fired from his job. He's going to be thoroughly discredited. And when that doesn't happen, to switch to a different narrative and say, you know what? I bet he's got cancer. I bet he's got terminal fast-acting cancer, and he's going to die in the next 10 years. And then, you know, I will have been vindicated for never having, you know, been in agreement with this person or been willing to countenance this person's evil deeds. And that just seems to be what I see in this whole switching of narratives, just looking for the worst case scenario story that gets any sort of traction with an audience in the moment.
Well, you know, I want to get back to that. I want to get back to the big picture of what this really means, but I'd like to get to some of the specifics, too, about the science. And one of the things about not getting the scale of things right, which is what you were just talking about, really, comes from Guy's use of this Arctic methane problem. And that's coming mainly from the Arctic News blog, but also from the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. Those are two separate things. But there are charts like those created by Sam Curran of Arctic News, but they fail to tell us that so far Arctic methane is just a tiny blip compared to our carbon emissions. We have less to fear so far from this amazing faraway maybe threat than we do from our carbon-based lifestyles right now. It's a distraction KMO that is, you know, taking people away from the factors that are really going to wreck our civilization and the natural world if we don't change.
I am not a scientist, so I cannot weigh in and say that I throw my scientific credentials and respectability behind one view or the other. But it does seem to me that the voices that are screaming the loudest about Arctic methane are not really well placed in the climate science community. And one thing that I'm seeing from Guy McPherson in his blog and in his presentations is he's sowing a distrust of the scientific establishment in general, saying that most mainstream climate scientists are too frightened or too venal to really rock the boat and say just how bad things are. And then he holds up these sort of fringe figures like Malcolm Light as the heroic truth tellers in the face of power. And that sort of insulates his entire narrative and the interaction between him and his audience completely from the scientific community, which it just doesn't strike me as a credible or legitimate tactic for somebody who's really interested in getting at the truth. It does seem like a very useful and time-worn practice for somebody who is looking to establish a cult of personality around himself.
Well, I've got two replies to that. First of all, heavy-duty climate scientists like Dr. David Archer and Gavin Schmidt, they've both been previous guests on Radio EcoShock. They've repeatedly taken these methane masters of frightened to task on the Real Climate blog. Methane is a serious concern for the future. They agree, but right now we should listen to real climate scientists, I think. But the other thing is I'd really love to talk to you and to your listeners about what I found out about Malcolm Light, and it's not great news.
I direct people to an episode of Radio EcoShock all the time in which you described Malcolm Light and his aims for harvesting Arctic methane.
Yeah, well, here, I'll just give you a little short piece from that blog, and here I quote, Malcolm Light's core article posted on the Arctic Methane Emergency Group website is titled, Global Extinction Within One Human Lifetime as a Result of a Spreading Atmospheric Arctic Methane Heat Wave and Surface Firestorm. He's not a very good headline writer, but that's what he says. Now, I just had Guy McPherson on the radio show last week. I specifically asked him how he arrived at extinction in the 2030s. Guy says he doesn't calculate that date himself. He relied on outside sources, and when I asked him who, the only other person he pointed to making that prediction was Malcolm Light, who posts on the Arctic News blog. So Malcolm posts what looks like a scientific paper, complete with complex graphs and charts, and we find this stunning announcement there, KMO. He says, quote, the absolute mean extinction time for the Northern Hemisphere is 2031.8, and for the Southern Hemisphere is 2047.6, with a final mean extinction time, so that really has any meaning, for three-quarters of the Earth's surface of 2039.6. Well, that's so precise, isn't it? In August 2031, say goodbye to all of us in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, I can't call that a paper until I find evidence it was peer-reviewed or published in an official journal. And, you know, I've been since told by Paul Beckwith that Malcolm Light's no longer a member of the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, but he's still on this very unrelated Arctic news blog. And that's it. That's the basis for Guy McPherson's claim for extinction in the 2030s, and he's sticking to it, despite warnings from myself and many others that this isn't science at all, KMO. It's fantasy.
Well, he knows it's not science, and he's not doing it for science, but there are a lot of people who are anxious to hear this message, and I don't blame them. I mean, there are people who are very frustrated with the way things are. They do not find industrial society to be providing them with any sort of meaningful life experience. They don't think that there is any prospect for justice or for a course correction in their lifetime. And the idea that none of it really matters and that the evildoers will be extinguished along with everybody else soon enough for us to see it and savor their defeat is a very attractive prospect. And so, you know, I don't fault people for gravitating to that narrative, although I do fault people who propagate that narrative when they should know better.
Yeah, Malcolm Light's a petroleum geologist. He didn't work directly for big oil companies, as far as I can tell. His employer was the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas in Austin. But he has these wild ideas, like he's going to stop the methane threat, you know, by getting every oil and gas rig we can stuff into the Arctic and try to drill out the methane before it can escape. It would still be a global warming gas when we burn it in the U.S. or Europe, but hey, at least we get to burn it before it creates more warming. That would be silly stuff if it wasn't so dangerously misleading. He has ideas to use radio waves from HAARP to zap methane out of the sky. You know, this stuff, we can't take this as the only source for humans going extinct in the 2030s and take it seriously.
What's more, you know, he gives these mean extinction dates for various hemispheres to 1/10 of a year accuracy. I mean, scientists don't make predictions like that, but there is a class of people who do make predictions like that. They predict disaster to the hour, and those are people who are noodlers with, you know, numerological noodlers with biblical prophecy, or people who claim to have received their information from aliens or from channeled spirits. I mean, there is a long tradition of predicting the end of humanity to the hour, but scientists don't do that.
I asked Guy what he meant by extinction. Does he mean most humans die, or would there be a few left in caves or around the Arctic Ocean? You know, James Lovelock suggested that. His exact reply was, quote, "I'm a conservation biologist, and when I say extinct, I mean every member of the species is gone." That really strains my belief.
Mine as well, but, you know, we are not his target audience.
I suppose so. Now, he's also woven the risk of nuclear power into his story of our end times now. You talked about him switching narratives. And he's right to say if the global electric grid goes down for any reason, if it's a massive collapse or a solar flare or a big nuclear war, then, you know, there's 400 nuclear reactors that could melt down like Fukushima. But we don't know that that will happen. And I think even if it added a million or a billion cases of cancer, that's not enough to depopulate the whole world, much less cause our extinction. And that's my opinion. I'm dead set against nuclear power. I think they should be shut down as soon as possible. But again, it's an exaggeration.
I agree. I was reading earlier today, and I'm afraid I can't cite the source, so I can't credit the person who made this comparison, but about 20,000 people died as a direct result of the Chernobyl nuclear meltdown. And there's something on the order of 400 nuclear plants in the world, so 400 times 20,000 is a lot less than 7 billion.
Yep. And another exaggeration that has a partial truth inside it, he says the oceans are dying. Just point blank, that's it. The oceans are dying. But, you know, I lived near the ocean for 25 years, and I know that isn't true yet. You know, a growing chorus of the best oceanographers do say ocean acidification from our carbon pollution will change the food chain in the seas. Maybe we'll get a whole lot of jellyfish instead and acid-tolerant plants. But I haven't found one ocean scientist that says the ocean is dying right now.
I fear, though, that a conversation like this, like there's a climate march coming up in New York City next week.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend, who knew that this conversation was going to be taking place, was very concerned that it not take place just before the climate march, because even poorly constructed narratives that don't have any substantial backing to them, if you debunk those, then it's easy for people to take you to be saying that things are fine. that, you know, all of this concern about climate change or destruction of habitats or resource depletion or the health of the oceans, you know, this is all just overblown hype. And it's not. We have serious, serious issues that we need to address in a serious way, like adults. And I really hate to be the one who is saying something which could be taken out of context and used by climate deniers or by people who are boosters for business as usual. So I don't say any of this lightly. And so talk of the oceans dying, coral reefs are certainly dying, fish stocks are being depleted. You know, the plankton are still doing their job, and the basic fundamentals of life and the cycles of life in the ocean proceed, but that doesn't mean that everything's okay.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing that we have to worry about, there have been mass extinction events, even in the ocean. There was the Great Dying about 248 million years ago. About 96% of all ocean life died, but it took a long time. It happened over a couple of million years. It certainly didn't happen in a couple of decades. So we think there are huge problems, KMO, and they're coming on faster than we expected. The climate's more sensitive than we thought it would be. You just got all these crazy rainstorms in Phoenix and Las Vegas and New England and, you know, popping up in England all over the place. But we're not going to go extinct in two decades, and I think that's what you and I agree on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, another key argument that Guy McPherson makes is his list of 37 positive feedback events. And those are forces that tend to feed themselves, driving global warming even faster. For example, reduced sea ice leads to ocean heating and even more sea ice melting. But there's two big problems with Guy's presentation of these feedbacks. First of all, he doesn't tell us there's another list, and that's the list of negative feedbacks. Those are the things that tend to limit these climatic events or these big changes in the environment. And again, you know, I'm not saying that positive feedback effects aren't important and that they aren't scary. They are. But there are other parts of the picture that he's leaving out. And I think it's responsible of you and I and anyone in the media to give both sides of the story, not in the sense of, okay, we'll let the climate deniers get on here and give us some baloney, but the fact that nature is a complex system and there's a lot of things going on. It isn't all one runaway climate change and that's it for all of us.
Yeah, I agree, and I don't really have anything to add to that. I think you're absolutely right. There are two lists and he only presents one.
Yeah. And there is a science-trained blogger named Michael Tobis who I sort of recommend. I don't like his style, but I do like what he's researched. And he was, a university academic. He's writing at planet3.org. And he's looked into these positive feedback effects that Guy McPherson lists, and he finds the total possible impact of these feedback loops is not powerful enough to generate the kind of runaway climate change that Guy McPherson is talking about. They're bad, and we don't know how bad yet, and scientists are still studying that, but, you know, even the worst-case scenario, we don't get wiped out this century by the things that he's talking about. You know, KMO, I'm kind of reminded of that net viral video where a guy films this triple rainbow and he's blubbering the whole time. What does it mean? You know, what does it mean? And that's where I'm stuck with this near extinction thing. What does it mean? What did John Michael Greer have to say about all this?
Well, I've actually been paraphrasing John Michael Greer for much of our conversation. Basically, just that Guy McPherson, as a scientist, should know better than to do what he's doing. John Michael Greer has had, I think, the tact to not speculate as to what Guy's actual motivations might be. I have speculated a bit. I have heard from people who claim to have been horribly mistreated by Guy McPherson, and I have seen him respond to people who are asking very reasonable questions with just attack. And this is largely what prompted me to start saying something out in public. He attempted a character assassination against Nicole Foss. And, you know, from there, he started to report that she had said things that she had certainly not said, that she was advising people to buy gold, you know, to survive the crash, when she says nothing of the sort. You know, she says the exact opposite, that gold is the last thing you want. You don't want to be sitting on a big stockpile of gold, you know, at the time in a really destabilized period. You want relationships with people that you trust and who care about your benefit. You know, who care about your well-being.
The other thing that I would say publicly, KMO, is that his later writings, his most recent writings, have a kind of paranoid twist to them. I mean, He said, for example, that President Obama knows that we're going to go extinct, but he just can't tell the public about it. He's made other claims that seem to say there's a vast conspiracy and that perhaps he's involved in it, or the people are against him for that reason. And this worries me. And, you know, Guy has talked publicly about the stress that's been put on him by this realization that he claims that, you know, that we're going to go extinct. It's a very tough thing if you come to that conclusion and then you think, well, you know, my kids or all the people I love, everybody, our future doesn't mean anything. And that's something that I think all his listeners are going to have to deal with. And I've said elsewhere that I think it could even be a mental health issue for some people if they are already feeling suicidal or weak and they hear this message, well, it's all over. Maybe bad things could happen. And I think we have to take responsibility for what we say to people. And I often think that about Radio EcoShock too, you know, and I've tried to always allow a way that we can turn this into a positive thing, that we could make a better world, that we can grow things locally, that we can do something ourselves rather than just leave it like, well, we're all doomed, as Guy McPherson does.
I think he would disagree with you on that point, but I don't know how he could justify that disagreement. To say that we are all doomed and there's nothing that can be done to save humanity from going extinct within the next 2 decades, that is a position of, that leaves his audience in a position of utter powerlessness. The only thing that they have any control over is, I think, as Guy would say, you know, the integrity with which they live their lives, which basically negates the ongoing efforts of anybody who is struggling to effect long-term change, anybody who is struggling to make political strides, you know, to advance progressive causes. In a scenario where we're all dead in 2 decades, no matter what, all of that is meaningless. There is no reason to continue. I don't want to say that even if we are all doomed in 2 decades, I would want to keep it secret. That would certainly feed paranoia. But you know, there is a certain wisdom to that line.
Yeah, I wonder if I came to that conclusion totally, I might just stop broadcasting and start growing my potatoes only. But I think that Guy McPherson and Carolyn Baker, they're choosing psychology as an answer along with spiritual counseling. Guy took a quickie counseling course and now offers himself as a kind of life coach, although I guess you'd call it a life extinction coach. He's also coaching people on how to homestead for the last days. He's just come back from doing that in Belize. I'm expecting this near-term extinction movement to move from claims of science towards overt religion. That's my prediction. Maybe my prediction will avert that from happening, but I think that's where it's going to go.
You know, if it's headed that way, I don't think your prediction will head it off. I think that, and I don't think Guy is the only person who is doing this. He's just the figure that you and I are most familiar with. But I think that as the doomsayers move in intensity and gather a larger audience, an audience who doesn't have much patience for scientific talk for the most part, that in spite of their stated intentions, it will move in the direction of a more obviously faith-based narrative than this pseudo-scientific narrative that it exists as right now.
We're so fascinated with this stuff. We've got world disaster movies in the last couple of decades, cheap television fare. Why do they make those shows and why do we flock to watch them?
You know, today's Sea Realm podcast was an interview with the editor of the Encyclopedia of the Zombie, and I don't know the full title of the book. But modern life, really, it doesn't provide much fulfillment for many people. A lot of people are very frustrated, and they think that they envision a scenario in which civilization collapses. But they band together with a group of other survivors and they fight off the undead, or they fight off the mutants, or whatever the threat is. And the threat of something that wants to eat you, when it presents itself, you either get eaten or you go into the fight or flight response mode and you leap or you fight or you do something which resolves the situation. And it's resolved. I mean, it's resolved. You escaped. You defeated the monster or whatever. But in modern society, your ability to fight or flee or, you know, do something ingenious in the moment doesn't save you from having to pay taxes or go back to that job you hate again and again and again. And the manager who's in your face and who is belittling you and who is giving you a really unfair performance evaluation, that guy, you can't just kill that guy, as satisfying as it would be to do so. And in the zombie apocalypse, you do get to kill that guy. So it's not a mystery to me why that is so attractive. That's why I have science fiction writers on the Sea Realm podcast. It's why I have horror writers on the Sea Realm podcast, because the sea stands for consciousness. And I'm interested in not just spinning some scenario which is plausible and I'm presenting as, you know, a bona fide prediction, and this is our entry to the dark side where we get to play with these ideas. I'm saying we have a natural tendency to gravitate this for very particular reasons. And let's set aside plausibility for the moment. Let's talk about the dead rising and civilization falling from that and see why it is so satisfying for us. And I think that if Guy and people who are on a similar trajectory would allow themselves to actually step into the realm of admitted fantasy from time to time, that they might be able to find something there which satisfies the ache, the need, the yearning that drives him to, you know, put his credibility behind this obvious pseudoscientific nonsense.
I think, too, the near-term extinction movement partly comes from the nuclear weapons standoff that many people grew up with, because our grandparents went through the First World War, the Depression, the Second World War, and they never thought that any of that would end the world. It wasn't until we actually had the ability to end the world with massive exchanges of nuclear weapons that we really thought we had that kind of power. And I think that kind of power is now being attributed to whatever, peak oil, to climate change. Without nuclear weapons, I'm not sure we'd be having this conversation.
Although the scary thing about that is the nuclear weapons are still there. The threat of nuclear annihilation has not gone away, even though it seems we had the opportunity to make it go away. That opportunity has been squandered.
Yeah. So what do we say to our listeners who write in, they want more news about Guy McPherson and our upcoming extinction?
Well, as I say, I have been directing them to a previous episode of Radio EcoShock, where I think that you did a very good job at showing just how thin a source Malcolm Light is and how little reason there is to take him seriously. I think I will probably in the future be directing people to this blog post by Scott Johnson.
Yeah.
And Scott Johnson has a network of fellow science bloggers who have also taken up this cause. And I think that there's a fairly substantial body of work that people could read, which is pretty convincing that this presentation that Guy is giving has very little to do with science and a lot to do with psychological needs which are left unmet.
Yeah, let's see. Scott K. Johnson, you can Google that. He's on fractalplanet.wordpress.com. I think that's his address. Or you can Google, will humans go extinct soon? And believe it or not, you'll see my blog just under the Wikipedia entry for human extinction. So it's right up there. People are checking it out. You know, I think Malcolm Light is about as serious a scientific source as Bernie Madoff was a good investment advisor. And I make no secret of that. You know, I'm going to have to wrap up my part of this conversation. We're sort of reaching the time limit that I have for Radio EcoShock, but tell people how to find your podcast and, you know, how they can tune into what you're doing.
Well, it's very easy. It's the Sea Realm podcast. That's the letter C and then a dash and then R-E-A-L-M. So it's SeaRealm.com. And if that's too much typing or too much to remember, just type KMO podcast into Google and you'll find it.
Right. Does KMO stand for something? Are we allowed to know what it does?
Kevin Michael O'Connor.
There it is. All right. And, you know, I'll put a link to any extra audio in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info too. People can find this whole thing there. I really appreciate talking with you, and I hope we're going to chat again. You know, you used some insight that set me on some new paths about this whole subject.
Well, I have found your show very enjoyable. I've spent a lot of time with it on long road trips, and it didn't occur to me until just today that we hadn't actually ever spoken.
No, I feel like you're a friend of mine, but here we are talking for the first time.
Yeah.
The media is like that. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.